This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you've ever been really upset and in need of some human support and someone just looked at you with a kind face or put their hand on your shoulder and looked at you with kind eyes, you'll know what I mean. There are sometimes when words are less effective than just knowing I'm not alone.
Welcome to Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. I'm Dr. Dan. This show is about making the world a more loving, accepting, and compassionate place, one parent, one person, and one child at a time. The key to raising healthy and engaged kids is for us parents to seek the same in our own lives while striving to be the best versions of ourselves each day. No matter who you are or where you came from, with increased awareness, you can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint for your children, your family, and all those you care about while living your own life to the fullest. Today's show, I am so excited about today's show. Today's show is Brain Body Parenting, How to Stop Managing Behavior and Start Raising Joyful, Resilient Kids, with my esteemed colleague, Dr. Mona Delahook. Mona is a licensed clinical psychologist with more than 30 years of experience caring for children and their families. She's a senior faculty member of the Profectum Foundation, an organization dedicated to supporting families of neurodiverse children, adolescents, and adults. She holds the highest level of endorsement in the field of infant and toddler mental health in California as a reflective practice mentor. She's a frequent speaker, trainer, and consultant to parents, organizations, schools, and public agencies. Dr. Mona has dedicated her career to promoting compassionate, relationship-based neurodevelopmental interventions for children with developmental, behavioral, emotional, and learning differences. And she is the author of the award-winning book, Beyond Behaviors, Using Brain Science and Compassion to Understand and Solve Children's Behavioral Challenges. And her latest book, which we are diving into today, Brain Body Parenting, How to Stop Managing Behavior and Start Raising Joyful, Resilient Kids. Finally, she has a very popular blog, which we talked about 5 years ago when we first talked on this show, which is at monadelahook.com. Mona, Dr. Mona, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show.
Dr. Dan, I can't believe it's been that long.
It has.
Thank you for introducing me again. Oh my gosh, this is so fun.
When I was looking back, and we actually recorded March of 2017, it was 2 years before Beyond Behaviors came out, and it was after that blog that you wrote went viral about oppositional behavior. And looking at it much, much differently, which has led to, you know, the first book, this book, and this new paradigm that you have bestowed upon us.
Oh, I'm so glad I wrote that blog. It was out of sheer frustration. Mm-hmm. I didn't even have a website, I think, I had a nascent website, but I'm so glad we met through that.
Yeah.
And you read it early on. It just kind of described how it was out of frustration of a decade of watching children being misunderstood and then deciding, okay, I'm just going to write a blog post, and the rest kind of fell into place.
And it's, your book, I just felt as I was reading it, both as a fellow psychologist and as a fellow parent and fellow human. Yeah. It was like everything, your decades of being a parent and being a psychologist consultant are all in there. Like it's to me, it's like the culmination of all this wisdom and hard work, you know, and lots of experiences that have culminated in this great piece of work. And I have to say for everyone, this is why it's paradigm shifting. We're all trained to look at behavior and what does the behavior tell us about the child and how does the behavior then determine the diagnostic categories, which then guides treatment. And what Mona is going to be talking to us about today, which is in this wonderful book, is this is like a new science in a sense. And I know it's grounded in many hard sciences, but it's a science of biology, physiology, and neurology to parent healthily. Would you ever have thought that all of that would be used in something that you have written?
Never. I studied mental health, you know,
yeah.
Psychology, as you and I know, our training was, it wasn't steeped in it. If anything, there may have been a couple physiology classes, maybe one, mm-hmm. but nothing like this.
Yeah.
So it's kind of mind blowing. And you're absolutely right. I was trained in our field trains us mm-hmm. to look for problems, to look for a diagnosis and treat it. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's kind of, you know, that's how our system works. But that threw me off as a parent. And as it turns out, it threw off a lot of the parents that families that I helped. And so
Wow. I was telling my wife about your book as I was reading through mm-hmm. it and saying, hey, no, hear this, listen to this. And we're both like, oh, this would have been so helpful for us to have with our three, with sensory sensitive type folks. That might be, it's an oversimplification, but it's like for so many of us that have these kids, and what is best practices is not always best practices. And so, so this new framework is so helpful in understanding our kids' neurophysiology in a way to understand them. And I want to lead with this quote that you quoted, someone that you have great respect for, Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett. Mm-hmm. We are the caretakers of each other's nervous systems as much as we are the caretakers of our own.
Yeah.
So tell us what does that mean?
It's such a powerful statement now that I understand it, but let's unpack
mm-hmm,
it. You know,
right.
What does that mean? Because it could sound mysterious, mm-hmm. right? And what does this mean? Caretakers of each other's nervous systems. But yeah, as it turns out over the last even 5 years, what we're finding out about how humans make sense of basic feelings or affects, if we're feeling good or bad inside of ourselves, if we are having certain emotions over certain experiences, it looks like the basic framework for what we experience in our life is coming from our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a mind blower right there, again, because what we traditionally think of it as coming from our minds, mm-hmm. of how we make sense of situations, right? Of what we talk to ourselves about. But if we take a broader view and think about the nervous system, just think of it as that the body and brain connected, because we're never just a body and we're never just a brain. We're always connected. And think of, and that's just a, I call it the platform. We can call a nervous system a platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything we're taking in real time, constantly. And as human beings, we are created, our little babies, our toddlers, even adults, we are created to seek other humans when we feel like we need help, when we don't feel
mm-hmm.
good. And that is why the best thing for a human is another nervous system that's fairly calm and functional. What I didn't put in there was another statement that Dr. Feldman Barrett talks about. And she says, and by the way, at times, the worst thing for another human can be another nervous system. Mm. And what she means by that is that when we are triggered, when our nervous systems are triggered, we may not be co-regulatory or helpful for our children. We may actually communicate that upsetness ourselves. Mm-hmm. And let's just say, myself included, yep. we all do that as parents. We're reactive, right?
We do.
It's nothing we should blame or shame ourselves about. We are human. We have nervous systems that react. And oftentimes we're triggered, at a deeper level by something our kid says or does. I talk about that a lot in the book, like how pissed off I was when my five-year-old didn't get excited about going to Disneyland.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Little did I know she had, undiagnosed sensory issues, which made Disneyland just toxic
totally.
For her body. But I just thought you a little ungrateful brat.
Right, right.
Because I didn't have a framework other than,
totally.
You know, yeah.
I have this image, I'm just smiling because I have this memory that I tell at times when relevant, which is, I was just thinking the worst thing we can do when our kids are upset is do what many of us do, which is yell at our kids. So our kids are upset and they're yelling, and then we're yelling at them to stop yelling. And our daughter was like yelling at one of her siblings. This is years, years ago. And we were yelling at her, and she looks at us and she yells back at us, "Why are you yelling at me to stop yelling at him?" And, like stopped in my tracks, like, oh, damn, that's a really good question. Yeah. It's not helpful, is it? It's really not helpful. Yeah.
Oh, the wisdom of your daughter. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, you open up the book with a really in-your-face example of all of our worst nightmares as parents. And I'm just going to set the stage so you can start to talk about the paradigm within the story of the mom with the young child. The young child at the supermarket grabs the candy. Mom says, put the candy back at the checkout. Child gets really upset. Mom is trying to handle it the best she can. She's escalating a little bit while trying to handle it. He's escalating, and it culminates with him throwing the candy in the cashier's face. And then her having to leave all of her groceries, horrified, taking out this screaming, upset kid. Like, how many of us have been in that or similar situation? It's so horrifying and it's so typical. And so take us through, like, that as an example of how do we parent through the neural platform as opposed through behavior?
Yeah. And here was an incredible mom, a teacher, I think she was a teacher. Yeah. And she's just so great. And it is our nightmare because she was doing and she was saying all the right things. And sweetheart, no, it's, you can't have it. Can't have that. We need to put it back. And she was just great. And then escalating.
Mm-hmm.
And then the shame that comes around when this kid just loses it and is in a full-on nervous system state of fight and wasn't intending to chuck it right in the face of the cashier, right on her nose.
Yep.
And that's what happened. So running out, just so embarrassed, mortified, in the car, crying mm-hmm. with her child mm-hmm. because she's just mortified. The child's upset because she's upset and they just don't know what to do. So, Here's why I started with that, because this is all of us, mm-hmm. right? I'm sure we've all, if you've had a child who's older than maybe three or so, that you might have experienced something like this, and you find that your best parenting skill, your best staying calm, your best talking, all those things, incentivizing just didn't work, and that's the reassuring news for parent is what happened to this child was that at a certain point, the nervous system takes over and the, what we call the platform, mm-hmm. That nervous system, the platform strength, think of standing on a wobbly board, mm-hmm. You're standing on the floor and then your nervous system gets on a wobbly board and you just can't get your balance. And at some point, the sympathetic nervous system that I call the red pathway, that red comes in to take care of you protectively through movement. Now, of course, that doesn't appear to be adaptive or protective. It's horrible, but that's what happens. And when we understand that other top concept that I bring into chapter one of the body budget, which is another of Feldman Barrett's terms, that our physiology, the state of our physiology, is the platform that launches behaviors. Not all behaviors are launched by our intentions or our thinking. So this wasn't a bratty four-year-old who was insisting to get their own way, trying to harm the cashier or embarrass his mom. This was a kid whose body budget was depleted. It was 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the afternoon after daycare, going home, making a trip to Target. And it was probably very ambitious because that was a vulnerable platform right there. And what we can do in that situation is just have a lot of compassion for the mom and for the kid and start to think about this wider view. And that is the paradigm shift is from thinking about all behaviors as motivated and incentivized, which is how our education system looks at things. Once a child can walk and talk, to a bigger understanding of how self-regulation develops and understanding that all the cards were stacked against that four-year-old. In terms of self-regulation, because developmentally he didn't have that skill yet.
And so there's a couple really important terms, neural platform, right? So that underlying container, and then the body budget. And I in a second, I want you to say a little bit more about that, because what this is making me think about is back in the day, again, when our kids were young, they'd have an amazing play date or a great sleepover. And of course, everyone wants it to go longer and longer and longer. Didn't have the language for, but inevitably learn, is using your language. If their neural platform's a little fried because they've been playing hard or slept over and didn't have a great night's sleep, and then their body budget is getting depleted, that extra half hour can turn from the most amazing positive play date or sleepover to a total meltdown disaster because they just can't keep doing it.
Exactly. And that explains the question. Wait, you had an amazing sleepover. We had all your friends over. It was so fun. It was everything you wanted. And then you threw a tantrum. You know, it helps us understand why the body budget expended a lot of energy. And let's just say you can expend energy in your physical body doing fun things. That your example of a sleepover is a great one. I have one too of my daughter's, like her first sleepover. I think I mentioned it in the book, first sleepover, and all those, you know, 10 friends, and she just expended so much energy at that point. She came into my room and just wanted them all to leave because it was just too much. We can understand now, and then again, maybe try to titrate a little bit, but also downshift when we realize the child needs more downshifting from us. All of this is in the service of, through their teens and early adulthood, of developing that self-regulation when they can say to themselves, you know what, I am so tired. I'm going to go to my room and hang out by myself for a while. But little children don't know how to do that.
No.
Even middle schoolers don't. It just, and many of us parents don't either. All of a sudden we're doing the dishes and we are so fried that we may say something to our partner or our kid that is like, oh, why did I say that? You know?
Yeah.
Our platform just got shaky too.
Well, and that's self-awareness. We are both aligned on the awareness, that both the self-care and the self-aware. You actually stated, I wrote this down because it was so, that self-care begins with awareness. And we have to know our own neural platform, our own body budget, because that's when we lose it. That's when we have like nothing left. And you gave the example of, you know, we're all as busy parents, there's just too much to do. You're trying to fit in an extra like not an extra, a target run at the end of the day, because you need something. And if you don't go now, it's going to be something you need tonight, or you're going to have to do it the next morning. So, okay, yeah. Let's just do it. Okay, we've been in the pickup line for an hour. People on the road are been honking, and there's so much traffic, and your child wants goldfish and not the right kind of goldfish that you happen to get. So you're doing this, and then we're talking about the need for co-regulation, but our child's dysregulated because their neural platform's off, their body budget is depleting, and guess what? So is ours, and that's a rough combination.
Yes. So is ours. And that's why it's one of the reasons it's so hard to parent, because you're right. We're doing so much. We are master multitaskers. We have to be. And we're a little too lonely in our parenting, mm-hmm. I think, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. We're doing so much on our own without support of our little communities and neighbors and parents, mm-hmm. because we don't tend to do things in groups as much. So when it's often the case that when our child's body budget is low, so is ours. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's another reason that self-care piece should be thought of as really our life support. And I love the emphasis you place on awareness and this the idea of the footprints. You know, I just love how you have always helped us slow down and try to see that there are these ripple effects. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't blame ourselves for them and just say we're human. And that's why I have self-compassion, yes, as a thread, yep, throughout the whole thing. Because for me, without self-compassion, I'd feel like a pretty, yeah, not very competent mom. And I have training, as I'm sure, yeah, you can agree. We have to just find it in ourselves. But I have to admit that, again, mindful self-awareness was not something that I was trained in, mm-hmm, as a psychologist. I found that on my own.
Yep.
Really late, when my children were older, right, to be honest with you, after some health issues forced me to slow down, I found a new level, yeah, of awareness. And slowing down and awareness is not something I think a busy parent necessarily may do on their own. I didn't.
No, nor did I. And I always thought, like, this cruel irony. I'm like, to my, you know, your kids are a little older than my kids, but they're all on the grown-up side. And it's like, oh, you guys, I'm just starting to peak and get wise. And now you don't need us in the same, yeah, way anymore. You know, it's like the yes, trajectories are not always aligned, especially when we're in the trenches. And that's why, again, your work can hopefully help all of these parents get there quicker than we did by having this information that you're talking about. You're talking about shifting from parenting behaviors to parenting nervous systems. And you guys, that sounds like just some words, but it is a completely different frame when you're looking at your child starting to melt, or, you know, the pre-melt, or as Dr. Ross Green would always call vapor lock, right? Like it's, you know, yeah, you see it start to happen. And it's totally different if we're thinking about what do we need to do to help regulate their and co-regulate their nervous system, as opposed to if you do this, then I'm going to do this, and then this is going to happen.
It's totally different. It's totally different. And I can tell you now that I'm doing it alongside my daughter and her husband for my granddaughter. Mm. It's a whole new ballgame. We are looking at her nervous system first, and she's a toddler. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the nervous system and finding these answers. And it's really taking a lot of the pain out of toddlerhood that I, that when you don't know that, yeah, when you don't know, oh, that's why she just threw a handful of peas across the table, yeah, or sticking on the wall.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's like, look at her eyes. Yeah. They are so tired. Let's downregulate. Let's like use our calm voices and get into tubby time right away. It makes sense, but it's not how we're trained.
No.
Our culture still has this idea about, bad behaviors and good behaviors. Is your child a good behaved child? You know, mm-hmm, and we tend to think that children who are having challenging behaviors aren't well parented or need something, yeah. need more discipline or something. It is, you're right. It's a different way of thinking about
it. Yeah, I'm thinking about how that unfortunate statement, oh, I have such a well-behaved child, or your child is so well-behaved. And my wife and I finally started to say to people, our children are really comfortable authentically expressing their full emotions.
Oh, I love that. You know,
it's like kind of like just a different reframe, right? It's like,
I love that. I love mm-hmm. that. And can I just say how many well-behaved, straight A, mm-hmm. very highly regarded students whose parents are so, so proud of them.
Yeah.
And I'd love that. Have ended up in my office through the years with chronic GI issues,
right.
with tummy aches, with anxiety. Yeah. And then another thing I talk about in the book is that you can look one way on the outside mm-hmm. and inside have a lot going on. Our children who aren't targeted for behavioral challenges, sometimes we have anxious children who try so hard to earn the badge, mm-hmm. right? To earn the badge of being well-behaved, but maybe struggling inside. But you can look at the subtle pieces of their nervous system, of their platform for clues to that too. Mm-hmm. So thanks for saying that. I think there's so much pressure. There's pressure to get into the best preschools, to get into private schools, and or to not have your child be labeled as a behavior problem, which is rampant right now post-COVID, not post-COVID, but mid, whatever we're at. It's just really hard.
And it is important for because all of us kind of want those kids, if we're honest. Like, we really love the kids that they do as they're told, they're self-starters, they achieve, they do well, they get accolades. Like, that feels really good as a parent. And as you're pointing out, it's like there is a cost for everything, right? Like, nothing is good, nothing is bad. There is a cost for everything. And usually those are the kids that are really internalized and do feel a ton of pressure and perfectionism. And so there's different learning
there's
for them
so many
to have than maybe the other type of child. Yeah.
And I just want parents to also know, if your child is a high achiever and they're doing well, many children, again, depending on their individual differences and sensitivity, do great with that and aren't anxious inside. There are so many variations, right? It's just that you and I probably end up seeing more of the kids who have additional sensitivities in their systems, additional feel things more strongly in their systems. Those tend to be the kinds of kids people take to see, a psychologist. Yes.
One of the primary goals, as you put it, is really to help your child calm their nervous system. And to be aware of their nervous system. And so to really learn these things that you write about, that you're teaching us, that you've learned about. And so let's talk about a few of these concepts that you're literally turning things up on end. The first concept is to look at bottom up versus top down parenting. So tell us a little bit about the difference between those.
Yeah. So if we think about this question, and in the moment we're thinking about, is this behavior my child bottom up, body or bottom up or top down? Or is am I body up or top down right now? Basically what that means is that is what we are recognizing in our child or in ourselves a stress reaction coming from inside of our nervous systems, where we are actually involved in our own protective pathway of behavior. And that body up, so some examples of a body up behavior, a classic example is a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
A tantrum that happens very fast, like the little guy at Target, Julian in Target, in the first chapter, that was a body up reaction. That was not a top-down behavior where Julian sat there, calculated how far to throw and how hard to throw at the cashier. Mm-hmm. It was not, I'm going to get my way right now. I'm going to throw a candy bar. The candy bar was thrown by a nervous system that required movement, and it was not intentional. So for some parents, and you know, I think it might be hard to imagine that there's actually, it's because it seems so intentional, right? But if we can think about, is this behavior top down or bottom up right now? Is what my child needs a top down response? And sometimes they do, or a body up response.
And give us an example of each. What would be a body up response and a top down response?
Yeah. So a body up response to a child in a very agitated tantrumy state where they cannot, you know, they're having a hard time breathing. They may be crying or screaming. A body up would be that we realize that we're not going to focus on our words. We're not going to focus on logic. We're going to do what works for this nervous system. Mm-hmm. So let's just say this particular child likes calm, soothing voices that are a little bit more quiet. So it'd be, oh, okay. Oh, sweetheart. All right. Okay. We're gonna get through this together. This is big. This is your upset or whatever it is in that moment. We're not really focusing on our words. We're like, okay, we're witnessing number one, we're staying calm while we're witnessing. Mm-hmm. We're not escalating the situation. We're resonating. So what does resonate? Resonate means we are providing this kind of presence that helps the other person know they're not alone. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever been really upset and in need of some human support and someone just looked at you with a kind face or put their hand on your shoulder and looked at you with kind eyes, you'll know what I mean. There's sometimes when words are less effective than just knowing I'm not alone. So those are body up responses when we're just kind of going to the nervous system. And in the book, I give ways to survey what those are for your child. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but for in general, a warm prosodic voice sometimes helps, not a loud voice. We don't want to restrain a person. So a respectful body up approach would not be unless the child is in danger of harming themselves or others. We really don't want to carry them to the car, for example. Mm-hmm. We don't want to restrain them because when you're out of control, your body needs to move a little bit. So you allow space. Okay, so that's the body up. Mm-hmm. Just a brief example. And then a top-down, let's think of a top-down behavior. A child is has been told not to take their phone, their iPhone, into school. Mm-hmm. And you discover that they snuck it into school. And you found it in their backpack.
And that's more thought out. That's a thought out plan most of the time.
That's a plan. It didn't just fly in there by itself. That may have been a very creative boundary testing plan, which maybe a middle schooler might do. And we would appreciate it for that testing piece of it. But the approach would be top down. And that is where we are sturdy parents. We are able to hold boundaries. We're able to talk to our child respectfully, but also make notice that this was caught and that we would then go ahead and talk to and apply our values and our parenting with our best parenting efforts as being sturdy and holding boundaries.
Okay. So that's a really good distinction for us, because when you have let's say a younger child who is having a tantrum and their body budget is drained and their neural platform is fried, the top-down approach, which is what most of us are taught, which is you need to hold a boundary. You need to show them that this is inappropriate. You need to tell them that there's going to be a consequence if this doesn't stop immediately. So those are all top-down parenting, which really only exacerbates the situation, because we have an upset child who's now being in their eyes threatened with more bad stuff. And it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Oh, Dan, yes. And my heart goes out to parents, especially parents of toddlers who are actually being taught to do this by preschool teachers or well-meaning pediatricians. I was at a cafe right before COVID. I'll never forget it. It was this adorable dad. I could tell he was trying so hard. He had what looked to be about a two-year-old, and the two-year-old was screaming, clearly had a low body budget, just screaming and crying. The dad was holding her in a corner of the restaurant, mm-hmm. and in his calmest voice saying, "This is a timeout. This is a timeout. Be quiet. This is a timeout." I know he was trying his best. Someone had told him that you have to be consistent and give timeouts. But the baby, the toddler, was escalating. Mm-hmm. She was getting worse. Right. And so these are the things I'm hoping that Brain Body Parenting brings yes. out in the open. And that is, we need to question with curiosity mm-hmm. some of the tools and techniques that may have been around 50 years ago before we knew about the nervous system
right.
as much.
Right. And you know, I just love where this field has been going. You cite and reference Dr. Tina Bryson, a colleague and friend, yeah. and Dr. Dan Siegel, who's just, you know, a pioneer yes. in the field of neuroscience,
oh, yeah.
and how their work on brain-based parenting has really, that shifted the paradigm, started to shift oh. the paradigm. And now you take that plus with connecting the brain-based parenting to the body. Right. And, yeah. and bring terms to us. And I want us to, these are fancy terms, you guys, that we all can understand. Mm-hmm. These are fancy physiological and neurological terms that if we can make sense of through Dr. Mona's great teaching, we can remember these in the moments with our kids. And so mm-hmm. Dr. Mona, tell us about neuroception and introception, because those are fancy, but when you unwind them, they're so important in this paradigm. Mm.
So important. And the concepts are more important than the words, because the words may change over time because research mm-hmm. changes. But okay, so you don't have to worry about the words, but really quick, neuroception. I call it the safety sensor. So neuroception is basically the subconscious detection of threat and safety. That is subconscious only means we're not aware of it. So our bodies and brains, kind of like a computer system, antiviral computer system running in the back of our brains, is always checking out, making sure we're safe on the inside of our bodies and from the outside world. So if you hear a super loud sound, your body will instinctively, if that sound gets closer and closer, start to move. But sometimes you'll actually sense something. Like, have you ever been in a kind of a creepy situation and you kind of sense that something's mm-hmm, not right?
Mm-hmm.
That's neuroception. Mm-hmm. So the way neuroception works is through another process that is getting a lot of interest in the neuroscience field, but it's a new, relatively new concept. I think 20 years, 25 years is pretty new. And as science goes, it's called interoception. Mm-hmm. And we become aware of our neuroception through this process of interoception or interoception, which basically means feedback that's coming from our internal organs and our inside of our body up to the brain,
mm-hmm.
mostly subconscious again. But when you become aware of a tummy ache, your heart beating fast, your pulse beating,
yep.
A toothache, that happens through interoception. So these processes yeah. are huge. I'll just say that understanding the safety sensor for me is so important to our understanding the psychology of our children,
mm-hmm.
because I'll just use the analogy I did with my daughter who didn't want to go to Disneyland. Mm-hmm. Had I known that her neuroception was coding loud sounds and fast movement, which is basically Disneyland, as threatening, her nervous system was. She didn't know it was. Mm-hmm. Then I would have understood that she wasn't just being, you know, didn't want to go with the flow and stopping our family from having a good time, that she was actually responding to and respecting her interoceptive feedback, which is setting a limit, saying no. And she needed mm-hmm. help through co-regulation.
Yeah. And
I just said a lot there.
This is explaining what we need to understand. And what you hit on is the physiological responses of the body for us to be aware of what they are in our kids. And for us, how about this, guys, to increase our kids' awareness of their own bodies, right? Their own neural platforms, their own body budgets. And so interestingly, so much of this work comes out of other fields like polyvagal theory, right? Dr. Stephen Porges, which I know you collaborate with closely and has been an amazing guide and has helped us all understand these bodies. And in the occupational therapy realm over the years, I've known of the ALERT program, the zones of regulation, and they all have this same sort of idea of teaching our kids about these pathways that are green, red, and blue, which is like, it's so simple and yet profound to help them become aware of what color they're in so they can take proper steps to right? That with this awareness, what do I do when I feel this way? So tell us about these different pathways.
So we're always looking for easy ways to explain complicated neuroscientific terms. So really, these pathways, which again are an indicator of how strong a person's platform is, how your brain and body are doing, how robust are you at the moment, we can look at three pathways of the autonomic nervous system. It's our automatic nervous system. And the colors simply stand for these different pathways that our body adjusts to, again, outside of our awareness, subconsciously, to protect us and keep us safe. So the green pathway is where we're calm, our body, our physiology is stable, we're calm, we're detecting safety in the environment. So our children or ourselves, this is when we feel at our best. It is when children play and tend to be more cooperative and they can learn. So that, we'll just call that the green. Think of it as a green light, that green pathway. And then we have, of course, since none of us can stay 100% calm all the time because we're human beings and things happen, we have the red pathway. And in the red pathway, it's also known as the sympathetic nervous system or the fight or flight system, is where your body senses something is amiss. Your body might have that neuroception of threat. Of something could be completely invisible. It could be a tummy ache. It could be a lack of sleep. It could be hunger. But your body senses something is not right, and then it seeks to right itself through movement. And that's why it's called the fight or flight. So in the red, we can be agitated, want to move. We can hit, scream, yell, say things we don't want to say. And it feels like we're out of control. So that's the red pathway. And then finally, the third main one is the blue pathway. And that's when it's actually the opposite of movement and agitation. It's when people start to conserve energy. So a child might turn inward or disconnect, feel like they're at the periphery watching children play, but they don't want to play. They don't want to talk to you. They kind of start to disconnect. And at the very tip of that pathway could be where someone momentarily feels immobilized, like they just freeze. So those are the main pathways. And I'll also say that there are definitely blends. Neuroscientists are looking at blends of these pathways. So those are the three, a simplified version of the three main ones. But there's other responses such as like hypervigilance, where a person may be kind of blue on the outside, but red inside, activated inside. So there's all sorts of fun stuff we can do about learning about what's going on underneath the hood, so to speak, for our kids.
So how would you say the concept of the body budget interacts with these pathways? If we're as a parent and we're trying to use these terms, you know, in a way to understand our kids.
Well, as you can imagine, in the red or blue pathways or blends of those, your body budget is expending energy at a very high rate. So if you're in that,
you know, if you're in a fight or flight, if you have a temporary, if your child has a temporary tantrum that lasts, you know, less than 2 minutes, and then they right themselves, that's, you know, less of a hit. But let's just say your child is crying for an hour, or they're pleading with you and they're very upset. That's going to deplete the child's or our own body budget. So basically, our body budget is takes a hit when we're under stress. So more stress and more depleted body budget.
So what do you think is the most helpful thing for parents to think about when we're thinking about these pathways? Like you have several examples in your book, and to me, it's just, it guides how to intervene as the way I see it. Like if I know that my child is red, I'm going to intervene one way or connect one way or self co-regulate one way. If my child is blue, I might come at it slightly different.
100%. And I think that's why they're useful, because it helps guide us as to those things that work with your child. But in general, a person in the red pathway needs a calming presence, needs that, like you said, that co-regulation with tools that work for that child to help them calm their body down.
And yes.
A child in the blue pathway would need a little bit of energizing. So our interactions might be more playful or energetic, trying to help the child to move a bit more with us and to move away from that kind of stuck feeling. So they can really guide us. And then, of course, asking ourselves, is this a child with a depleted body budget? And if it is, then we want to go to make those deposits as quickly as possible.
Yes.
You know, whether that deposit is a good meal or taking a nap or going to bed, you know, then we really want to make those heavy duty deposits, especially with our emotional tone and our connections.
Which then comes back to our own self-awareness about what we're bringing to the situation and how we're feeling, so we can show up the way our child needs us to in a way that's going to be helpful and not unintentionally spike or trigger a situation that's already going in a certain direction.
Absolutely. The better we feel, the more grounded we feel, the better we're able to show up for our children at that moment. So it really pays off to be aware of ourselves, to have that awareness, and especially compassionate awareness, not judgmental awareness, as so many of us tend to do.
Right. So Dr. Mona, what is your hope that people get from your book? Like, what is that? What's that wish that you have, that intention?
My true intention is that parents will find solace in everything that's experienced as a parent, the good times and the bad times, and understand their behavior and their children's behavior in a new light, and be less judgmental, find more joy, and also, you know, understand the difference between a behavior that is needing discipline and a behavior that is an indicator of a child who's suffering from stress. Yeah. I think it's a new concept. It's going to take a while to catch on, but I'm really hoping that those are some of the big messages of the book, that it's not just behavior management as a parent. We can look, we can have this bigger picture about what it means to be a parent, what it means to be a child, and shift our expectations through a new lens using neuroscience and compassion.
Beautiful. And I can tell you that even in the past few weeks since I've read your book, I've been using the terminology, the conceptualization with parents that I've been working with. And it is so helpful and validating for them to hear it. And I mean, the look in their eyes, like, whoa, I never considered thinking about my child's underlying physiology. We always just focus and are told to focus on the behavior. So this is such an important paradigm shift in the field. And I'll be waving the flag with you. And I'm so grateful for your contribution.
Oh, thank you so much, Dan. That just makes me so happy that just to hear that. And thank you so much for being a paradigm shifter with me. This is amazing. Thank you for that beautiful compliment.
So we can't let you go before the final Parent Footprint moment question. You are a veteran. You've done this before. So here we go. Mm-hmm. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as an individual or as a parent, or even an awareness of your own parents, and that new awareness had a positive impact on your life, your kids, and those you love.
I just love that. I love that question. And I have a feeling my answer might be the same. I'm not sure as the time you asked me before, because it's such a moment that shifted my life as a parent and as a psychologist and as a person. But I was sitting in a study group, and we were diving deep into this idea about the difference between top-down and bottom-up behaviors. A colleague of mine, we were really diving deep, and I had this aha moment. I realized that with one of my children, I was blaming her for behaviors that I thought were due to character building I needed to do in her and discipline. And I realized that what I thought was top down was body up, and that there were such great reasons for her behaviors. And tears just flowed from my eyes as I was kind of trying to compose myself. But I remember at that moment, I thought, I'll never look at my daughter the same way again. Mm-hmm. And that shifted how I also worked with my patients. So that was over 2 decades ago, but that was a moment that I think was seminal for my work.
And that's the compassionate awareness comes in right there, right? How we have to be kind to ourselves when we see something differently and realize maybe that we should have been maybe. I don't like to say the shoulds, but maybe we could have done something differently or seen something differently. It happens to all of us. And we have to be grateful for the new awareness and be kind to ourselves for whatever was before.
That's absolutely. Above all, don't go back and don't go into the regrets, and no blame, no shame. Yeah. And with that warm blanket of compassion, to allow new information to come into our awareness without judgment, but with some curiosity. And I can tell you, I'm still learning from my adult children. So this is a process. We go forward and we give ourselves grace, and we realize these humans in our lives, our children, are also our greatest teachers.
Absolutely. And now you're learning from your grandchild as well.
Oh, yes. It's such a yummy and fun way.
Dr. Mona, thank you so much for this conversation. And I'm so excited for everyone just to learn about your book and this paradigm and also just how gracious you are in your book to really building on all of the work of so many people that have contributed, right? All paradigms that shift are, it's a process that shifts over time. Yeah. And you're so gracious with bringing everyone in who have made a contribution to your thinking and to this work.
Oh, thanks so, so much, Dan. I'm so grateful to spend this time with you and be able to talk about this, all these things that mean so much to us. So thanks again.
Yeah. All right, everyone, we are concluding this wonderful conversation. Go get that book, Brain Body Parenting by Dr. Mona Delahook. Tell everyone where they can find it and your stuff.
Oh, sure. Well, you can find it Amazon and bookstores, Barnes & Noble's, independent bookstores. So it's at a lot of places. But if you want to go to my website, there's a book tab. You can look at my website. Then you'll get if you fill out a little form, you can get a refrigerator sheet of goodies, of reminders, as well as a download. So my website is monadelahook.com. And I'm on social at Dr. Mona Delahook at Facebook and Instagram as well.
Nice. Always putting out good stuff and stuff you can put on your fridge.
Stuff for our fridges.
Stuff for our
visual
fridges.
Reminders.
Exactly. We need them. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for your 5-star reviews. Thanks for referring these shows to your friends and bringing people into our amazing community. Do your best to be that person you want your child to become. And ask yourself the guiding question I ask myself each day. What footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Strummer Man, composed and performed by ProTunes. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com. Listen, follow, and leave us a review on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, you can listen to new episodes 1 week early on Amazon Music or early and ad-free, plus bonus episodes by subscribing to Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Follow Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you don't miss an episode. If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.